Welcome to the ProWrestling.net podcast for Wednesday, July 8th, 2015. I am Jason Powell, and I'm joined today by current, maybe former, not quite sure. I guess we're all going to find out together. Current TNA Slammiversary wrestler, at least, Matt Morgan. Matt, welcome back to the show.
Hell of an introduction, Jason.
Yeah, you can tell I really worked on that one because I'm not sure. How should I be labeling you right now? Because obviously you returned at the Slammiversary pay-per-view, and I know you've been putting out there to the masses that you did this for your son, and there's a lot of skepticism because everybody always returns in wrestling.
Yeah, I know that. And as a fan, not that I wouldn't want to see a Terry Funk or some of my favorite stars of the past come out of retirement, because I would. But a little part of me would be like, all right, this is the third time now, dude. Like, come on. You know, and it loses its luster, I always thought, you know. And here I am, you know, for the last 2 years, every day a fan would ask me something new about coming back. You should go to WWE. The basic questions that they probably say that it's asked every wrestler on Twitter, right, that no longer is wrestling. But I really try to drive the point home that I love wrestling, but, you know, I love my family a hell of a lot more, and I have a golden opportunity working for a medical company in the medical field, selling medical devices. And more importantly, it gives me time with my kid. I take him to daycare in the morning. I pick him up every day. I work about 5 hours a day, and I'm the number one territory manager in my company, freaking crushing shit. And I love it. I really do. And I basically go into, there'll be various venous and vascular surgeons performing the surgery. I'll come in mid-surgery, give the doctor my opinion on what strength compression that patient should be wearing for their lower extremities that they're having that said procedure on for their leg veins, and call it a day, basically. And I do that all throughout the day, as well as market to other medical supply stores on top of that, our brand of compression garments. So it's an opportunity, and it's a legitimate career that more than takes care of my family financially. It's something that I was very underqualified for, and I was just very blessed that the opportunity came my way, and I had to take advantage of it, obviously. And I was looking to leave wrestling within a 3 to 5 year window anyway. I was looking to do one more WWE run possibly, and then that would be it. But, you know, we had our child, and when he came, and I literally had him in my hands the day he was born, you know, you hear how everybody says it changes their life, but it really does. This was a boy that took me 10 years to have, you know, and we told by 12 of the best, you know, fertility doctors all over the country, not just here in Florida. We flew into different states for help. We spent over $100,000 on 7 IVF procedures that didn't work for us. And wouldn't you know it, on year 11, naturally, we get pregnant of trying, you know what I mean? And so it was such a gift, such a blessing, and I don't ignore the Lord's blessings when they come my way, and this was a huge one. And here I finally have this kid, and he's a boy, no less, you know, it's every god daddy's dream, and it's to have a boy, and I'm going to go on the road 3 to 5 days a week. I just couldn't, I couldn't do that. There's just no way I can do that.
I remember talking with you, I think it was actually the day before your son was born was the last time that you did an interview with me, and you were very excited about this job and all the opportunities ahead, and immediately start hearing from people once the interview goes up, oh, you're not buying that, are you? What, you know, whatever he claims he's making is probably a fraction of that. It just, if for some reason, nobody ever believes anyone can get out of the wrestling industry. And I obviously don't expect you to go into a breakdown of what you're making, but I mean, as excited as you were at that time, has it lived up to the hype?
No question.
Good.
There's no question. I wouldn't keep doing it otherwise, because like I said, I've had at least, you know, I'd say 15 different opportunities to go back between 2 different wrestling companies over the last 2 years. Why wouldn't I take it? Well, that should answer every question financially right there.
Well, you mentioned WWE. Did you have an opportunity to go there?
2 Royal Rumbles ago, yes. And it was, my son was born on January 7th. And that's when I really just made my mind up that you can't half-ass this, Matt. You've got to be obsessive about being a dad the way you were about wrestling and the way that you're going to be about this new job that you're about to take, you know? And it really does, it completely changes your entire mindset on what you value. It really does. And I know it's a nerdy answer to probably give, but I couldn't care less because that's my truth.
You met Royal Rumble. Was it come in as a surprise entrant in the Rumble, or was it?
It was a very, I don't want to say last second, but it was, I know that we were looking to do some business together, and it was discussed that, I should be clearer about this, that if I did come, it would be around the Royal Rumble time when I would come back. So I should be clearer about that. I would say maybe a week or two later, it started being discussed that, you know, they didn't want to do any business with any former TNA branded talent because they wanted to focus more on their performance center, which I don't blame them for. It's a lot of money they're putting into that. Why not brand your own stars, which I fully agree with. But I think what they learned with that is there's no reason that they can't take some of the TNA guys that are really gifted or talented and can contribute now versus later, because that's what they need. And brand them the WWE way. The WWE has been doing that for years. I mean, one of the best examples I can think of is Chris Jericho. They took a guy from WCW, and that's WCW we're talking about, not TNA. Monday Nitro, Jericho's one of the most entertaining acts on that show, and WWE completely changed his outlook, his perception, and was, boom, immediately put out there as a WWE Raw superstar from night one on. You know, and I think so many people's opinions, who already had high opinions of him to begin with, his fans, changed. I know mine did. Mine was like, this is awesome. You know, he's on the same level as The Rock. This is great, you know. And again, that's a WCW-branded talent we're talking, which is a lot bigger than a TNA-branded talent, I would say. Wouldn't you?
Oh, well, yeah, for the most part.
As far as shaking, if their concern is shaking a former rival branded talent and making it their own. WWE has made, they did it with Big Show as well. You know, they've done it better than anybody. So
right.
I don't see how they couldn't take a former team. Let's say Bobby Roode or James Storm. I don't think it'd be brain surgery to take either one of those two guys, or even an Austin Aries for that matter, and bring them into your camp, do whatever they've got to do while they're down there, and then bring them up as a WWE superstar all on their own. You know what I mean? TNA is a much smaller brand than WCW was.
Well, and that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, it definitely, no doubt about that. So we go, we're kind of jumping all over the place here.
Yeah, let's stick to the why I came back.
Yeah, that's the thing. So you have this great job, you have your son, everything's
mm-hmm.
going good.
Mm-hmm.
Was it as simple as you wanted your son to see you wrestle? Was there
yeah.
more to it than that?
No, there definitely wasn't. You know, it would always be cool, number one, to work with Big, you know, somebody who I really have a lot of respect for.
John Gabort.
Appreciation. John Gabort, and a lot of appreciation and gratitude towards. He was one of the very first and few true believers in Matt Morgan at one time. And bringing me on Tough Enough from day one, all through the show till I got hurt, and then, you know, get sent to OVW. You know, he always kind of kept tabs on my development. And I always appreciated that, you know. But you have to be more loyal to your own family first and foremost. And that's the biggest lesson I learned out of this. And so holding true to that, you know, I just, you know, there was never the right opportunity that I was even considering coming back to wrestling. I'm happy doing what I'm doing. And most importantly, being a father and being an obsessive, compulsive father at that with my boy. And making sure I see everything that he's doing, you know, and being a part of every step of his development. And I love it, you know. All fathers do. And you always hear some of the veterans talk about one thing they could change. It would be, you know, they could have been a better father. I definitely don't want that to be mine, you know, my take home from my sacrifice of being in the wrestling business, you know. And so it was a pretty easy decision for me to make. But as far as coming back, it was always going to be just for one match. I made sure they understood that it cannot get in the way of what I'm doing currently during the day with my day job. And they couldn't be more accommodating with it, you know. They're trying to get Bram over at the time. I'm friends with Bram. I think he's got a hell of a future. He's got so much potential.
Yeah.
And he's finally starting to live up to it more and more each week. And how many guys came in, or how many guys over the years of TNA, Kurt, Sting, guys like that, Steiner, so many guys at one point or another, you know, did the job for me to help me, advance, right? So here's my opportunity, one, to give back to a company that was good to me, two, to help a personal friend of mine who I think the world of, as far as talent goes, and has a future, and three, my son, and this is probably should be the first thing, actually. I wanted to be able to say that my boy actually saw his dad wrestle live once, you know. Granted, he's 18 months. It is more of my own thing than it is for him, I should say. It's very greedy on my part, but I want to be able to look back, you know, when my kid gets older and he's going through the YouTube videos with his buddies from school, and they go, so, Jax, did you ever see your daddy wrestle? And he has to say no. You know, that kind of sucks. And so, like, this was one of those things that, you know what, that kind of checks that box off for me, so to speak. You know, Jax, here's some pictures of you watching daddy wrestle, actually. And I literally told my wife, you know, when we go to this show, I need you to take as many pictures of him watching this show as possible. And, you know, I want him to be there and be a part of it, you know. He came backstage with me. That's, you know, I had him take pictures with some of my friends, some of the other wrestlers. It was a really cool experience, a totally different experience with a whole different perspective. A little pressure because, again, I've not been in a real wrestling match in 2 years. I did a couple indie shots in Canada where they were just basic squash matches or a couple 2 or 3 minute jobs here and there where I just come in and kill people, or in a three-way where the other two guys did most of the work and I just chilled outside the ring selling. So, like, this is my, like, first real match in 2 years. And I had dropped a ton of weight. I've dropped 26 pounds because I'm getting ready to do a men's physique show in September. So, like, I came into that match super ripped to begin with. And it wasn't for that match that I did that. It was because of that show in September I got coming up. And so, really, it just made sense. It was the perfect time. It didn't get in the way of me doing my job every day, not at all. Big, or John Gabor, told me that I could come in literally an hour before the show, before my segment, I should say, where I did a run-in with Bram. Nobody knew I was coming. And then Sunday at the pay-per-view, you know, I was coming back from a business trip in Georgia. I had my family with me, and Jackson and my wife that I took with me for it. And made the drive back, let him know that, hey, I'm running a little late. He didn't, you know, he was cool with it. I got there, you know, not too long before show started for the night of the pay-per-view. Put together my match with Bram, and the rest is history. So they could not have been any more accommodating at all. Like, and it was great to see everybody again.
How did it come about? Did they reach out to you, or did you call them and say, hey, I'd really like to do this?
You're not listening to what I'm saying.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe
course,
you,
no. I'm being arrogant. They definitely reached out to me. This was Bram going, you know, it just made sense. Bram's going, this is how it was described to me. Bram is going through, you know, calling former TNA stars of the past out and basically gotten through them, you know, one by one. It's supposed to get a little harder, more challenging. And then finally, it was explained to me, you know, his coup de grace would be challenging me accepting his open challenge at the pay-per-view, you know, getting a TV out of it plus a pay-per-view, right? And that's how it came about, and that's how it was explained to me on the phone when they first pitched it. Because, I mean, you can ask them. At first, I said there's no way. I have no desire to wrestle again. You know, I love it. I love my time doing it, but that's just, unfortunately, at this time, it's just a former chapter. That's an earlier chapter of my life, you know. And it is what it is. And but then as soon as, you know, Big explained it to me, it was perfect, you know. And then when I was sitting there talking to my wife about it, you know, she brought up the whole thing about, wouldn't this be a cool opportunity to have Jackson, you know, watch Daddy wrestle? And I was like, it really would, you know. So it just made sense.
Was this the first time they'd reached out to you since you left? I mean, has there been any? I know you have that relationship with Biggs.
No. They reached out, I'd probably say five times. 5 or 6 times maybe TNA has over the last 2 years maybe.
And was it more of a, hey, just in case you're interested, or did they come to you and present you with ideas?
Seeing if I'm, you know, are you really done, you know? I mean, we're coming back to Universal, you know, something along those lines.
So even they didn't believe it?
I don't know. I say they, it was always under the guise of, look, you don't have to quit your job. We'll work around it, big man. That was always what Big would say. We'd work around it. And I can't appreciate. I really appreciated that, actually.
It's just,
here's the thing. That's a weekend I'm giving up that I have with my kid and my wife, that my new job, well, I've been doing it for 2 years now, allows me to have, you know? I take full advantage of my weekends with my family.
Did they present you with any ideas in those past pitches? Was there anything that was tempting at all?
Mm-mm. Nothing was tempting, no. And it wouldn't have mattered. They could put the championship belt on me, I still wouldn't come back. You know, no offense. It's I'm not saying it to sound like a dick. It's just that's my reality. I actually like being a dad. I like the job that I'm doing right now, and I don't know why that's so far-fetched.
Well, it's the wrestling thing. That's all it is, you know, because we've seen a million retirements.
No. Do you know what it is? It's called the mark thing. It's called your mark for yourself, and you believe the phony business of pro wrestling, and you dangle your own imaginary carrot in front of your face for one more run, brother. If you got a family and you should be home taking care of them and doing what makes sense for your family first and foremost, not you chasing that one more spotlight, okay, but for your family, then you take care of your family first, and it's not even a decision. It's really not. I thought it would be. I thought it would be a tough one when I left wrestling. I really did. I thought I'd cry over it. You know what I mean? I thought it would be some serious emotions. But it wasn't. And it wasn't because I didn't love it. I did it for friggin' almost 12 years. So you don't just do that for 12 years because it's a job. You do it because you love it. But it's just not the same kind of love. And if you heard me earlier about what I went through to have this boy,
yeah,
it's not even debatable. It's not even open for discussion.
Well, okay, just to play devil's advocate here, you know, some guys, wrestling is what they have. And in terms of career options, they don't have many. So you fell into a pretty good situation where it's pretty lucrative. Put yourself in that position where it's, Matt, you can continue to wrestle and make pretty damn good money, or you can give that up and spend time with your family, but you're going to work a 9-to-5 and kind of make regular 9-to-5 money. What would you have done then?
What was best for my family, I had the best of both worlds here because I'm making good money financially,
right,
and I'm allotted a lot of time at home. I mean, I'm the one bringing him to daycare and picking him up every day.
But if it wasn't, you know, if it was just, hey, you're going to make,
yeah,
you know, 10-15 bucks an hour.
I don't want to answer that because I don't have that. That's not my situation.
Fair enough.
No offense to anybody. I couldn't care less. That's their decision to make on what they feel is important and what their value system is at that point.
Gotcha.
That wouldn't be my value system. That wouldn't be my context, so I couldn't answer that.
Now, you and I,
and I know it would never happen because, again, I'm a college graduate. I graduated third in my class. That was not a work. So no matter what, whether wrestling worked out or not, I was always going to have a good job.
We were talking beforehand about one of the pitches that they did come to you with was for a bodyguard role.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if, by any chance, was that the role that Tyrus now plays for EC3?
They didn't say. They just told me that they, one of the times, you know, I talked with John Gaborik, you know, he I think he saw maybe I did an indie show, and that was just doing a favor to a friend of mine in Canada who is retiring from promoting, Bert the Hurt. Shout out to Bert the Hurt. And maybe that stirred his interest as far as maybe Matt's not really done with wrestling yet. He still got bit by the bug still got him a little bit, maybe. I don't know. He can answer that better than I could. I don't know the answer to that of why. But he did call me and said, hey, look, we're looking to get some real steam out of one of our new guys that we're going to start giving a lot of attention to right now. And we need a big, giant, jacked up heater for him, and you would be perfect. Would that be something you'd be interested in? And I'm like, bodyguard role? And he was like, well, you know, basically, yeah, you'd be his bodyguard, but, you know, it's like you're just going to be some muted, you know, knuckle dragon, you know, bodyguard. You'll be Matt Morgan, the blueprint Matt Morgan still. You just be his heater. And it's perfect because, like you said, you don't want to leave your job. This would allow you to, you know, get out there, get back on TV, you know, help us get a recognizable face back on the show. And at the same time, you know, you're not doing any harm to your body. And if, let me be clear, if I didn't, you know, even if I didn't have that job, I wouldn't have said yes to that just because it's a step backwards from what my character's development has been from TNA from day one there, where I started as a bodyguard, and I slowly evolved into an actual in-ring competitor, right? And then I evolved into the Blueprint. And then we're off and running with that character. So I definitely appreciated the opportunity, but they never said, hey, this is who you would be bodyguarding for. So, I mean, I don't know who that was or who that wouldn't be. My guess is, like what you said, maybe it was EC3, maybe it wasn't. You know, I didn't get into it. And no offense, I couldn't have cared less. Just because, you know, that wrestling, again, was so far in my rearview mirror.
It has been a couple of years now, other than this Slammiversary and the Impact appearance. How much wrestling are you watching these days? Did you have to do just a complete disconnect, or are you still a big
fan
of the
industry? No, I thought I would. I thought I would. You know, I thought I'd be like one of those bitter, salty guys going, oh, God, I'm bitter at him. But no, I like watching all the new crop of talent coming up out of the Performance Center. Actually, I like watching, you know, I love, love, love watching the NXT show. That's my favorite wrestling show. And I'll watch Raw, fast forward through Raw, and see if any of the new guys come on, like Kevin Owens or guys like that. And I'll stop and I'll watch it. You know, now waiting for Finn Balor to come up. Love his work. Joe's now there. You know, it's going to be an exciting product, I think. And the work rate is going through the ceiling as far as their main event picture is just getting better and better and better with workers. It's something they should have been doing a few years back, to be honest with you, because there's a lot of guys there that they've hired that I don't believe would get a job 3 years ago there, but they should have.
Right.
But they finally changed that mindset, that stubborn mindset that everybody has to look, well, the way I look, you know, and I'm the guy that has that advantage, and I'm telling you that's not what's best for any brand. I think what's best for any brand is guys that get out there and can go, and that's what fans want to see nowadays, I feel. I know I want to see that. And I love watching it. You know, the Seth Rollins is, you know, guys like that. Ambrose, they're fun to watch. And I try to watch as much of it, you know, with, you know, Jackson sitting here right there on my lap watching it. But, yeah, and in TNA, if I know something special is coming on, like one of my buddies says, hey, Matt, can you watch this? Let me know what you think. You know, I'll definitely DVR it, or I'll watch it live, and I'll let them know.
Now, why not more TNA? I mean, they've clearly gone through a youth movement as well.
I did not know where – I'll be dead honest. I didn't even know where the hell Destination America was channel-wise. and you got to remember now, I'm coming home from a real job now. I'm coming home at around, you know, 4:30 maybe. But then from there, I go train with my trainer at the gym, and I'm getting ready to compete in a men's physique show in September in Daytona. So, like, my focus now – I got a lot on my plate. My job, my son – my wife, and then obviously this men's physique show coming up, and that's a crazy rigorous diet, and getting my ass handed to me every night in the gym by my trainer, as well as my posing coach. So like you know what I mean. So like my plate is so full, and so when I have a TV, like you should see my DVR list. Back, you know, just 3 years ago when I was wrestling, and I'd have you know, those two straight off days, I would funnel right through my DVR list. Now it's like, it keeps deleting shows because I haven't gotten around to seeing them. I have entire seasons that I normally would watch episode week by week, destination type television, that I didn't get around to seeing, you know, and rack up 12 episodes straight on my DVR. I just don't have the time. I'm playing with my kid and trying to do whatever I got to do. If I got to do some extra work, paperwork wise or reports wise or things like that, I'm doing that. You know what I mean? And I actually enjoy it. So, anything I do, Jason, I'm obsessive compulsive about. It's no secret I have ADD, and I firmly believe one of the caveats of ADD, at least with me, is when we find something we have passion to do, it's a wrap. Nobody's going to be better at it. No one is going to be better at it than we are, or at least we're going to die trying to prove that. You know what I mean? And I put my all into wrestling, and same thing with this job. Like, I enjoy being the number one guy. Like, I have to be their number one territory manager or I go absolutely bonkers and can't sleep until I become the number one guy again.
Wow.
You know, I really get off on sales like that. It's just an athletic, competitive type thing that I've always had instilled in me. You got to try to be the best at everything you do. If I was playing ping pong with you, I would be talking shit the entire time until I whipped you. You know what I mean?
You're that guy.
I'm so annoying. You don't even understand how annoying I am. Yes.
You walk into the Impact Zone, and you said you got there about an hour before that show, I believe. And,
yeah.
You know, once you get through the greetings and people being surprised to see you, did you pick up on any resentment that they're behind on pay at times, production was informed
right.
that weekend, they're going to be late. Did you sense any resentment that here they are bringing in another, technically an outside
yeah.
guy now?
No, because it was me.
Yeah.
If it was somebody that never worked there, I mean, if any of them had resentment, I'd argue with them that I was there before them, and they need to slow their roll. I put in a lot more work than a lot of them did. Not than say a Bobby Roode or Storm or some of the TNA original guys, Eric, guys like that. No, but the majority of those guys that I saw there were not there when I was there. That's for sure. A good bulk of them were new people, basically. And these are guys that haven't been there for a year or two. So they if I felt any resentment, I'd tell them to slow their damn rolls and calm the freak down. You know what I mean? If they get to that point where they put enough work in with that company, where that company respects them enough to say, hey, look, you'd really help this guy we're trying to get over right now. You'd help him immensely if we could bring you in and you'd work him at a pay-per-view. And if it's the way the business works, you know what I'm saying? This is a company that I put a lot of time in, you know what I mean, with had opportunities to leave. Was it two other times while I was in between contracts, I should say, with TNA, and I remained loyal to them, you know. So these guys are just around recently, you know. If those were the types of guys that had any resentment, I didn't notice any of it. Everyone was pretty damn cool, actually, and I thought it was a pretty decent vibe overall. Now my friends that had been there from day one, I could see they were very, very fatigued mentally, as far as they didn't have the same excitement I remember them having on TV days when I was there.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But, I mean, there wasn't many of them. There was no more AJs, no more Daniels, no more Kaz. No more Joe, no more a lot of those guys that were on from a long time ago. And so it was weird seeing some new people, but these were new guys, you know, that worked at WWE before. Tyra seemed like a real cool dude. EC3, very respectful, very, very cool, great worker, great charisma. I'm trying to think who else was new since I'd been there that I thought was pretty cool. I'm sure there's some others there I'm missing. Drew was pretty good, mad cool. Again, very respectful, and he's a great worker too, very underrated. And surprisingly really tall. I didn't think he was that tall.
Yeah.
Drew McIntyre is tall as hell. Got a great look on him. I don't know what the hell WWE, what he did wrong for them to drop the ball with him at WWE, because he is the exact, you know what I mean? I call myself the blueprint, but his look and everything and his work rate is fantastic. If you've ever seen him work, like, I'll watch some stuff on YouTube too, by the way. If people are like, hey, you got to check this match out. I checked some stuff out with him when he left WWE and was given an opportunity to actually work 20-minute matches, you know, on the indie scene a little bit, and he tears the fucking roof down when given the opportunity. And that's very rare for a guy his height. So, I mean, I don't know how WWE dropped the ball with him.
Now, well, when you say the guys didn't have that same zest on TV day, it's not that
yeah.
they're just worn out on the business, it's the stress and turmoil of the situation in TNA?
It's not like, remember, I'm coming back for a one-off, right? So I'm not saying, so hey guys, is it really true what they say about the pay here? You know what I mean? It's, hey Matt, you bringing your son? Is your son coming back here? Great, I want to see him. I want to meet him so bad. Or, you know, things like that. And, you know, how's life? What's it like being a dad? And then me, you know, just talking back with them, like, you know, how's the business treating you? You know, you look in good shape. Whatever it is, just small talk, you know? But I remember talking to Storm, and I knew he was leaving, you know, not very long before the rest of you guys found that out. I would say, like, maybe a few minutes. But, you know, he wasn't like, oh, I can't wait to get out of here, screw this place, you know. Storm was a very loyal soldier to that company, boy. But, you know, rightfully so. What else is he going to do there, you know? It's time for him to move on. And I just hope WWE does right by him and brings him in and gives him just a legit opportunity. I think Storm's a big star. I really do.
Do you believe that is what he's aiming for? He wants to go to WWE at this point?
I hope so. I would imagine so. That's everybody's goal, whether they say it or not.
Sure. With all the turnover, did you sense a change in locker room leadership since you'd been there, or had some of the guys that, you know, were still there at that time, were they still in those roles?
I wasn't around, you know, really long enough to really – I mean, I was in locker room changing. Nobody seemed more domineering than the other or more, hey, guys, let's get together here and let's – you know, I didn't see anything like that, you know, but – locker room leaders would step up at TNA when there'd be a breakdown in communication between the office and the talent. So someone like Bully Ray, I remember, would pull us together once in a while, or even Joe at times. You know what I mean? And that's a true locker room leader. From my understanding, MVP is a pretty decent one, to my understanding. Ken Anderson is as well. But I don't know if that still goes on there. I don't know. MVP wasn't working the pay-per-view, so... He really wasn't there when I was there.
And with the pay-per-view, you have the match against Bram. It was turned into a street fight. Was that the plan all along?
Right. My lower, that was my request, just because, you got to remember, I ain't wrestled in 2 years.
Right.
I don't care how great I looked, how vascular I looked. You know what I mean? That's great and all, but if you're not in wrestling shape, it's a whole other ballgame. We're talking 2 years, dude.
What was that, your request the day of the show or going into this whole thing?
No, going into it.
Okay.
And it's perfect because that works right into his strength, actually. Now, guys, to answer your question from earlier, Jason, of, oh, is this really a runoff or is this – first of all, I would not agree to come back and just lose a match like that and then come back to the company.
Right, right.
All right? That wouldn't be happening. And two, I wouldn't be dumb enough as a babyface to go out there and call a heel out to his strength and then lose and not deliver. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If I was coming back. My point is I didn't care. I wanted to give him the best performance I can give him and play to a lot of my strengths, hide some of my weaknesses. And that's what we did. I just wanted to be able to be there for him and do what I needed to do to help propel him forward. That was the goal. And when I came through the curtain, you know, Big was clapping for me. Matt Conway was.
Some of the other writers. It was really cool. It was a great feeling, you know. They were impressed that I had done, you know, that well after 2 years of not working, you know.
And did you? So you came out of the match satisfied with it?
Yeah. Normally I never am. But, again, 2 year layoff.
And you... Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's a 2 year layoff. That changes your context, the context of it completely.
And how much, I mean, did you get a sense of how much your son was able to enjoy at 18 months? I mean,
yeah, exactly. It's not like he's in there going, yeah, Dad, let's go. You know what I mean? But,
yeah.
Again, it was more of for me. It was more to be able to have these things, that moment, you know, of walking by and giving, you know, my kid a kiss on my way back from the match Sunday, and bringing him right to the backstage area with me, you know, as we went off camera. Little things like that, man, that's something that I thank TNA a million times over for, you know what I mean? That's a memory for me that I'm very happy I was able to have with my son.
Now, what happens when your son turns about six and says, Dad, I don't remember. I'd like to see you wrestle again. Will you entertain that thought?
No, because I'll be an old man, and no.
So,
nope.
I mean, is this it for you, or are you still leaving the door open? That, well, you know, maybe another match here or there somewhere down the road.
If I was leaving the door open, again, I would have came back on one of these other opportunities I've had to come back to either company. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
it
you did come back for
months
this.
After. It would have been, Jason, 2 years. 2 years.
But
two
now that
later,
you're back.
I didn't come back 3 months later. I didn't come back 4 months later. I didn't come back 5 months later. I'm still doing the same job for the same company and running shit, might I add. Not. but crushing business. And I love it. I absolutely love it, what I do.
I mean, well, okay, your son's 18 months, say he's 5 years old. You know, just flash forward 5 years, what, you're in your mid-40s, early to mid-40s at that point. I mean, it's
yep.
a long
so,
layoff,
so now,
obviously.
So let me get this straight. Because my kid goes, Daddy, why don't you wrestle again? I'm supposed to then jeopardize, because that's what it would be doing, jeopardize my family's, let's say, finances, jeopardizing my health, more importantly, jeopardizing my time. That's what this is all about, Jason.
Right.
I'm going to jeopardize my time to be on the road 3 to 5 days a week to answer my kid's dare, basically. or did you, I don't understand why this is so hard to understand. You guys live in that wrestling bubble world.
See, I'm trying to give you
much.
The out here just in case you do.
No. And if I do, I'll tell you the exact reason and the 100% truth as to why. I don't ever see that. It's not going to happen, though. And if it, for some reason, does, like this one did, like I told you the truth as to why I came back.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to, you know, use this for, so more fans, because I know everyone listens to your show. And I felt very guilty, to be perfectly honest, when I came back on that Wednesday night episode, and I'm going, shit, you know, these fans that have been asking me every day, and I told them I'm done, and now they see me back. I look like I just lied to them, and I don't want them to think that kind of a thing, you know. This really was something that just made sense, the right place, right time. But I had to say that I'm back so people would buy the pay-per-view, right? If I said, hi, I'm back for, and this is just a one-off.
Sure, sure.
No one's going to give a crap about me versus Ram. And then the finish is completely tipped off. So, and then I hurt Bram by doing that. And that's not the point of what I was there to do. My goal was to go there and do whatever I had to do to make him look good and do what so many friggin' guys did for me in the past, to be honest. I never really got that opportunity to help put somebody else over or asked like that the way I was like on this particular occasion.
I don't know, you said your friends. How appreciative was he after the fact?
Good. He's like me, like as far as being a perfectionist, though. I think every wrestler that gives a crap about the business is, and you're never going to be satisfied. But as far as what we had lined up and what we had laid out, I mean, I know he was satisfied with it. I know he's more than satisfied. He's very appreciative. I know that. You know, he was thanking me, you know, over and over from the very, you know, beginning. And then after the match was done, you know.
Now, I know you're not watching TNA consistently, but he is a guy that you're friends with. I guess my concern with him, because I definitely think there's something there, is they're doing.
It definitely is.
Yeah, and it just kind of feels like they're doing too much of the hardcore stuff with him. You made it seem like
right.
This was kind of the peak of his calling out the legends. Did you get a
yeah.
sense that they're done with the hardcore stuff and he's going to start becoming more of a straightforward wrestler type?
Not that my opinion matters one iota. I'm not a writer, and I'm not there enough. And I do remember text messaging John Gaborik afterwards, you know, text back and forth thanking me, and me thanking him. And I just put it in there as well that they've got one hell of a talent in this guy. He is friggin' he could be the real deal. Honestly, he really is that good. He's very believable, is what I should say. Very believable. And that's very hard to come by, right? And so I put in there, though, he's just one Jeff Hardy angle away, you know? Somebody that's this super easy to sympathize for babyface, you know, where he gets a, you know, maybe a good 2 to 3 month angle, if you will, away from being where they want him to be at, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know? And I said, take it for what it's worth. This is coming from a guy who was there for a whole whopping 2 days. So you could throw my opinion in the trash, and I wouldn't blame you. But it's something that I noticed. You know, he's just one angle away.
And what I mean by angle, well thought out, well drawn out, you know what I mean? And it has to be the right guy. I mean, how many times do you remember when I was at TNA where they'd get me, you know, get the jet on me, and then it would be like this one angle I was in that would just totally backtrack me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just to get me on TV versus I'd rather sit out until you have something a little bit better that's going to keep me going in the direction we want me to get to. And I think he's in that predicament where he's just that, like, again, in a perfect world, it'd be Jeff Hardy. You know, babyface Jeff Hardy. They love cheering Jeff Hardy, obviously. And he's a great babyface who sells like no one else. And Bram kicking his ass in, you know, and punishing him, it's just the perfect matchup. And that's what he needs. And he needs it to last. It can't just be a one-off. It can't be a three-week thing. It needs to be 2 to 3 months, you know. And I just had mentioned that I think he's, you know, he's only that. He's just that, either that Kurt Angle or Jeff Hardy, you know, 2 to 3 month angle away from being that main event, that consistent main event guy.
Watching, whether it's at home, seeing some TNA or being at these shows, and I know you don't, you know, you're done, but
right. Yeah.
Was there any, do you get the juices flowing a little bit going, man, if I were full time, God, I'd love to work with this guy. Anybody jump out at you?
I think usually when I match up with other big guys, it wasn't always good for me and vice versa. You know, I always subscribe to that Kevin Nash theory of I match up better with somebody that can create the movement for us and our storytelling, you know, a smaller guy. But that said, I think I could definitely do some good business with Tyrus. Definitely the obvious people, you know, in EC3. I'd love, you know, someone like even a Jeff Hardy again, but, you know, this time, done right, where I'm the freaking heel and he's the face. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not a newly turned Jeff Hardy heel who no one on God's green earth ever wants to boo.
It went better than I expected it to. I will give them that.
Jeff did really well with what he had to do.
He did.
That's why. And Bruce Pritchard did a really good job. I remember it like yesterday, producing Jeff. He did a fantastic job with him. If you remember some of those pre-tapes, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But once the bell rings, I'm sorry. I want to cheer Jeff Hardy.
You know, the guy that comes to
him.
Well, the guy that came to mind when you're talking about kind of working with a smaller guy, and maybe it's just too much of a size difference, but I don't know that there is such a thing.
Oh, Spud.
Yeah, exactly.
Spud all day. Give me a heel. Let me, me as a heel versus babyface Spud. Oh my God, yeah, that would be fun. And Spud's is actually a legit friend, so that would be cool. He's somebody that I remember it. Oh God, I went to England, saw him. I went to an indie show in England while I was still with TNA, saw him come out with his entrance, his Bon Jovi entrance, and his rock and roll gimmick he was doing. It was also a comedy gimmick, and it was hilarious. And, like, all the other wrestlers were watching from the curtain, and I'm watching, you know, and I was like, holy shit, this kid is entertaining as hell. And then, you know, I kept in contact with him, and he'd send me these YouTube videos of him calling out, you know, other, you know, British indie talent over in his, you know, independent companies he was working for there. And his promos were just awesome, and his creative as hell. And I remember Magnus, you know, was friends with him as well, and we always were just trying to, like, pass his stuff along. And I was always tweeting his videos and retweeting them and trying to get as many people to see him as possible, because you could see he had something that was huge, you know? And I definitely would like, you know, he'd be somebody that would be fun to work with too. But, you know, that I don't think this, what it is I didn't allow myself to fully immerse myself in, again, the wrestling bubble world. I came into this the entire time as, you know, Matt Morgan, you know, 38-year-old dad, who's here to have his kid watch him wrestle and help a friend, you know, get to the next level, brother.
Well, and you got to go out on your terms, because when you left TNA, I know you asked for your release, but at the time, I think you were giving up completely for this job. Wasn't there still some WWE aspirations at that point?
Yes, that's the time before I technically started my job, right? And I was going, and that definitely, I'll be honest with you, I was still going doing the back and forth thing, you know, mentally on what to do. What do I go back there? Do I do this job? You know, and really had to think long term. Then my son was born, and then that's when it was a wrap. It wasn't even a decision. I still can't believe how easy it was to make. Because like I told you, I always thought it would be such a major sit-down conversation with your wife, and it wasn't. As soon as I held him, because, again, he came out, even when he was born, he wasn't breathing for like a minute and a half. And they had this emergency in there, and everyone flooded the room.
Oh, man.
And they put the oxygen mask on him, and he started, you know, slowly but surely breathing. And I'll never forget it. I literally got on my knees right then and there. And I was like, I will never leave this kid's side, Lord. And just please do whatever you have to do to make sure he comes out of this. Please, you know? And I was just in tears. I really was. And he's the biggest miracle we've ever seen or had. So I'm supposed to put that miracle on hold 3 to 5 days a week?
Right,
no,
right.
It ain't happening. That's what I mean when I said when I finally held him after all that. It's like I just made that promise. I'm just never going to leave him.
That's really cool. How are you holding up physically these days after 12 years in the ring?
Shit, didn't you see your boy's abs?
Well, I know you're training and for your workout or your up.
You know how bad I wanted to be a heel and go, Jesus Christ, folks, even the 2 years away, look at him. Still the only non-fat giant in sports entertainment today. Look at his ass. No, I'm just playing.
But, well, you're working out for your thing. I mean, you can look. We've seen guys that can look the part, but they're hobbled. They're hobbling around off camera.
You're absolutely right. My knee, what the fuck am I saying? I never had problems with my knees, except for a tough up when I was fat and out of shape. But my lower back was... We're always going in as spasms. That's no big deal while you're wrestling. That's just part of the deal. And I'd say after about a year out of the ring, it started to subside. And I thought I dodged a bullet because I was always told I'm going to need some sort of, you know, minorly evasive type of laser or spinal like back type of surgery. Not like Hulk Hogan's or something, like really deep, you know, just something very minimally evasive.
Yeah.
Invasive. And so that's something, you know, I'm sure I'll still need one day. You know, my back will go into spasm every once in a while, but nothing crazy. Spasms are very tolerable. That's really it. And that's another reason, you know, another pro of getting out. I'm able to do whatever I want with my kid. I could shoot hoops with him. I can do anything, play catch with him. You know, as we get older, you know, I'm going to be a lot older than him. You know what I mean? We had him late in life. So to be able to still be able to keep up and do those things is important to me. And luckily I dodged a bullet in that regard. I really don't have any major injuries to speak of.
And so really the back spasms were legit? You weren't just weaseling your way out of TNA European tours?
You got the wrong 7-footer on the phone, brother. No. What the hell are you talking about? No.
Yeah, how much interaction did you have with Dixie during the weekend?
That was freaking awesome, because I will say this. She, and I know everyone hates when people, you know, they think we try to over-glorify Dixie or put her over for no reason, and I wish people would just see the truth. She's a really good human being. She really is. And this was awesome because... She was one of the people that really felt me and my wife's pain of being told no chance in hell by every single specialist.
I remember
to the
you
point
that,
where,
yeah.
You know, she was game to fly us down to Nashville and see her specialist that she had to see when her and her husband were, you know, trying to get pregnant at one point. And it worked for her. And, you know, she's going to fly us down there first. She's just the best in that regard. She really is. And so for her to be able to, you know, hold my kid or see my kid and that was pretty, that's pretty surreal.
Any signs of the turmoil taking its toll on her, or is she able just to kind of put that aside?
I didn't get, and I'll be dead honest, because I got there so late, I really didn't want to take away, I had to really put my time in with Bram and make sure that we were lined up right, and make sure that we were telling the proper story that they wanted us to go out there and tell, and that we came up with. But it was more, you know, pleasantries and saying hi again and, wow, you look great. You know, well, now you look great. That kind of thing. You know what I mean? Basic stuff. But it's just, you know, she was like a mother figure at one point for me. You know what I mean? And she's still somebody that's very, very close, you know, to my family, that we'll always consider close to our family.
Any,
That's really it. That's the gist of it. That's all.
Any interaction with Billy Corgan? I don't know, with the days you were there, I don't know if you...
Yeah, actually, he's technically one of the agents over my match. Him and...
Oh, cool.
Actually, I take that back. Abyss was our official agent, but Billy was definitely involved with it a little bit as well. You know, he's the writer, right? So, Billy I met years ago. Cornette was friends with him. And, you know, I congratulated him on, you know, Twitter direct message or something like that when he got the job. And, but I met him years back when I was still actually ironically being a bodyguard for Cornette.
And
TNA.
How did he conduct himself? I mean, because you knew him on a friendly basis before, and here he is now on a professional basis.
Very low, very, very, very low key. Not walking around like, hey, check me out, I'm Billy Corgan. You know what I mean? Not like that. And talked enough, you know, just right in the middle. I'd say right in the middle of the road. Right where you should be, actually.
When you heard the news of him getting this creative gig, I don't know how many conversations you've had with him. Did you feel like good move TNA, or were you a little, I don't know, how much this guy knows?
Knowing his, you know, don't get me, like, he has a ton of passion for wrestling. It's obvious. I don't want to name names or anything, but we've had worse, you know, TNA, they've had worse writers there. So, I don't see I actually think he has a good feel as far as what fans want to see and thinking outside the box. And at one point, you remember how everyone knows, the Ring of Honor fans, that's such a small percentage of a paying audience to a WWE show or a TNA show. And, well, you know what? It's not looking that way anymore, I don't think. I think it's increasingly becoming that style of wrestling that all fans would like to see. I'm not saying we can go out there and kill yourself and do 39,000 high spots in a row, but right along the lines of, say, a Daniel Bryan-style match or a Joe match, you know, or a Finn Balor match or a Kevin Owens match or, you know what I mean? I think he gets that fans want to see that. And let's wrap a good story around that and get these characters over, you know, first, and then the moves will work themselves out. You know what I mean? And I think he's a good hire in that regard, you know, because I think he's always going to be trying to do those things to think outside the box because he's such an avid fan. You know what I mean? He's not bitter. He's not jaded, right?
Yeah.
The worst is when we hire, you know, like bitter or jaded, you know, writers who are, you just want to look at them and go, why the fuck are you even here? Why are you writing? Like, what do you, you know what I mean?
Anyone you want to clarify that you're not talking about so people don't read between the lines and get it wrong?
I didn't even know those were lines to be read between. just a broad stroke statement, I guess. I don't know. You know, it's just like even with wrestlers, shit or get, you know, they always tell us shit or get off the pot. I just don't know why creative isn't held to the same standard.
Sure, yeah. It's a good question.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you want to wait for a talent to get over. And Johnny Ace was famous for that quote. Shit or get off the pot. You know, and give a guy an opportunity, you know, half-ass type of opportunity. And then, boom, the guy's gone. Well, then why wasn't creative held to the same standards when they have a lot more to do with the entire outlook of a show? You know what I mean?
I do.
I think they should be held to more of a standard, actually, to a higher standard.
your former employer. Oh, go ahead.
And if it doesn't work, you know, then you move on. You find somebody else. There's thousands of people out there. I think they could be great writers, right?
Well, WWE's got hired countless, and sometimes I wonder. I'm not quite sure anymore, but maybe they're looking in the wrong places. But your former employer was there, Jeff Jarrett. When did you find out that Jeff Jarrett was going to be returning to TNA?
Oh, brother, I knew about that 6 months ago. No, I'm joking. Nobody knew that. nobody knew that. It was cool to see him in his family, though.
So even though you got there an hour before the show, you found out even after you got there?
I'm trying to remember. I don't think I saw him at all beforehand. No. He came out right maybe 10, 15 minutes after I had gotten there. I got there super late, and we didn't have to talk about much. I just had to do a running. It's not brain surgery, right?
Yeah.
So I literally got there, I think, 25 minutes before I had to run out. And I'd say Jeff got there 10 minutes after I arrived and walked out and did his promo. And it was just a big surprise to most of the locker room. Because I'm a douchebag and hadn't been keeping up with it enough, did not know, I didn't know, was that a current storyline I'm not aware of?
Oh, wow.
I'm that far out of the freaking loop. But then when I saw, some guys' reactions, I was like, maybe they're working it. Who knows?
What was the reaction? I mean, within the locker room.
Surprise! Some guys got up and stormed out of there.
Really?
Yeah. And at first, I didn't know that's what they were doing, quite honestly, because it wasn't like they went, "Oh man, fuck this," and puffy stomped out of there or something. It wasn't like that. I just, body language-wise, thinking back, I was like, oh, that's why a couple of them got up. Okay, that makes sense now,
And it sounds like you don't want to name names, and that's fine, but, did you get a sense of why they had that reaction? Was it frustration with Jeff himself, frustration with the company?
No, I have no – I literally have no idea. I didn't ask. I didn't – God, I sound so callous to me. I didn't care.
And did you get a pitch to work for Global Force Wrestling?
Yeah, and I feel bad, but yes, Jeff wanted me to do one. He knew I was done and with wrestling, but again, had something that would line up if it lined up perfectly. You know what, Matt? We can use you on this date. If you can do it, great. If you can't, hey, no big deal. And I felt horrible because Jeff was, again, he's one of my first, especially at TNA. He was one of the first people that when Jimmy pitched me to TNA. Actually halfway bit and was like, giving me, Matt, I know you can talk, we'll work you in slowly but surely, just be patient. And Jeff definitely believed in me. And you want to repay, I'm loyal like that. So I would love to have repaid him that. That's not even repaying him the favor, honestly. I'd have to do that 100 times to repay him technically, right, on an equal term. But I did feel bad, I felt kind of like, damn, Jeff, I don't even know how to say no to you here. It sucks. But, I can't. I'm supposed to – we have a mid-year sales meeting and, that I have to be at on that date, and I can't miss it. I'm actually getting an award, and I have to be there, And he understood. That's why he prefaced the call with it, saying, look, if you can't – if this doesn't line up for you, then don't sweat it. But, we could use you on this date if you're free. What do you say? So –
now, looking at this as now a retired pro wrestler, what was the high point of your pro wrestling career?
Boy, that's a great question. I mean, my definitely character development wise, no question, TNA. I think I got the most towards my potential with TNA, or closer to it. The closest to it, I should say.
Is there a particular match?
For many different reasons, there's more than one. Ric Flair, because it's Ric fucking Flair.
Yeah.
And he was gracious enough to, pitch the idea that I go over on him and what it would help, he'd help me along with what they needed, where they needed me to get to immediately, which was Hotshotted versus Jeff Hardy following that in two straight pay-per-view main events, right? So that was very cool of Rick. Very, very cool. He's a good friend to this day and somebody I totally respect. You know, so for the fan in me and the respect that I have, Ric Flair is definitely a high point. How can you not say that, you know? My stuff with Jeff, I think it was ass backwards as far as him. I should have been the heel. He should have been the face in a perfect world. But that's not the slate we were handed.
Oh, Hardy, yeah.
Jeff Hardy, yeah, thanks. And Mr. Paying Attention. And so I'm just joking, Jeff. That overall, though, our work in the match, the stories we told, I thought were good, and I was proud of them. You know, I'll go back and watch those now and be proud of those two matches versus Jeff. My stuff with Anderson I liked. But, I mean, if my number one is definitely Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
You know, that was a great build-up. That was a six-month-long angle that Vince Russo thought up, and he told me this is where we're starting, and this is where we're going, and that's pretty much exactly what we did. I think at the end, we didn't make the right decision on who went over. Not to sound like a mark for myself, but you do all that work to get your big white meat baby face over. You have them go through your main event mafia one by one in this really cool storyline. You have to have them beat the final guy or the coup de grace, if you will, right? And even Kurt was pitching it. Like, no, this doesn't make – Matt needs to win this match. I mean, he's right. He's still Kurt Angle afterwards.
Wow.
You know, that doesn't change.
And was
that – no, it got changed. Unfortunately, it got changed because he had to be ready to wrestle AJ Styles for the title the following month or 2 months after or something like that. That was his next big angle. And it was really important to make AJ look strong and – you know, to have Kurt lose back-to-back angles, you know, that was the issue, I believe. Still think it was the wrong decision, but that's not my job and not my pay grade. So you do what you do and try to make the best of it. And, you know, we got a standing ovation. I was the heel. You know, he raised my hand. People still clapped for us afterwards. I wrestled damn near a 20-something minute match, kept up with him, and did the best I could. So I was very proud of that entire Bound for Glory match versus Kurt. And more importantly, that entire six-month angle leading up to it. I developed a lot as a talent during that.
How discouraging was it coming out of that when, I mean, it just seemed like...
Very, very, yeah. Very, very. No question. I don't have to sugarcoat stuff any longer and, you know, hide your feelings because you're scared of not working somewhere again. It is what it is, you know, definitely. It's very discouraging. Unfortunately, but, you know, you get back on the horse and you try to, quite honestly, shove it back up their ass if they made the wrong decision with the next angle they give you and try to knock it out of the goddamn park. And they put me back in, they put me in a tag division, which just didn't make any sense after doing all that work. All those guys lay down for me. So, like, what a slap in the face it is to them that these legends did that, you know, the Steiners and guys like that. You know, and then that's where that's your finish line from Matt Morgan after all that guy? What the hell? You know what I mean? If I was one of those guys, that would be my thought process. And I remember that being a lot of their thought process at the time. You know, I don't blame them.
Well, do you blame anyone in particular for the lack of follow-up from that match with Kurt?
No, I think I said it earlier. No one I'm mad at or anything. I don't care anymore. It's just a chapter in my career. And
well, maybe not that you're mad at, but I mean, is there...
I don't know
you...
who creatively made that decision. I
gotcha.
Just know with Kurt, when we went back, you know, when Kurt it suggested that it made more sense for me to go over, and I remember Vince explaining it to me that, you know, that you're correct. That would be the right move here. But unfortunately, we do have him now slated to go against AJ, you know, for the title. We need AJ to look, you know, strong, and he's our champion, you know, so I understood that, actually. But you know, you're asking me an honest and candid question, and I'm giving you an honest answer that, yes, that's discouraging.
Do you still have Hulk Hogan's cape?
I cut my grass with it last week. Dude, you should see me with a weed whacker with that freaking bad boy around, strapped around my neck, dude. I look awesome.
You should wear it to the bodybuilding competition.
Dude, I wore it with friggin' tighty whities. No, of course I mailed that back to him. You know, I brought it to the dry cleaners for him, and because that thing was in the back of my truck for God knows how long. And
In the back of your truck, a piece of wrestling history.
Not long. I'm exaggerating, you know, a month. Dude, the thing is huge. Where the hell do you put that?
I don't know. Your closet on a hanger?
No. You, dude, hello. I'm 7 feet tall. Did you see how long it was?
That's true.
Big it was? That thing was frigging a curtain. Hulk was humongous, dude, back in the day, bro. That's all I kept remember thinking. Going, holy crap, this fit him?
Good memories of your time working with him, Eric Bischoff and company?
Loved it.
Yeah.
I loved working with Hulk Hogan. Loved it. And I like my time with Eric, don't get me wrong. I don't necessarily think Eric was a big believer in me. I don't have a reason to say that. It's just a gut feeling. And I very well could be wrong. I got along with him great, though, and I respect him a ton. He helped me get better at times, and somebody I can go to with questions. But Hulk, especially, how can I say it, you know? Same with that Ric Flair type of answer as far as very memorable parts of my career. You know, Hulk went out of his way. He's not part of the creative team. He's not even a producer or a director. And he'd bust in the middle of the TV creative, you know, they'd be going over what they're going for the, you know, what they're doing for the day, what's going to be going on for TV that day, as they say, going over the format. And anytime they'd come to my stuff, Hulk would be like, all right, what are we doing with Matt Morgan? What is our long-term goal here? Is he our giant or not? Because if he is, this makes no sense. This is what we should be doing instead with him. And then there'd be like a push and pull between either him and Eric or him and whoever creative was at the time. And, you know, I don't know if that pissed creative off and they get mad at me over it. I don't know. I don't really care, though, honestly, anymore. So I couldn't really answer that.
One final thing I wanted to discuss with you. I mean, I think a lot of people forget, and some of it is just because you've transformed your body so much since then, but you mm-hmm. were part of Tough Enough Season 2. And
yeah.
For people who want to hear us discuss that, I think we touched on that in that interview we did, I guess, 18 months ago. But I do want to get your take. Are you watching a lot of the current season of Tough Enough?
I watch the living crap out of that WWE app on my iPhone.
Yeah.
You know, I'm stuck in traffic.
Like the network?
On it. The network, I'm sorry. Yes, the network. It's awesome. It's really, especially the old school stuff. I love it. But, you know, I watched NXT. That's new. You know, that's the new stuff they got on there. And I'll definitely watch Tough Enough Talk. I watched a lot of that. Tough Talk, you know, Miz hosted and stuff. That's a pretty entertaining show so far. Again, you know, that's how I got my start, and being on Tough Enough. And it's come a long way. It's very different. It's way differently formatted. I think it's pretty cool how it's different this time around. But that said, I still think people want to see, like, what I keep getting the gist of is Miz and whomever's hosting their Tough Talk show, they manufacture some of the heat that these contestants, and you can see these contestants just go, yeah, and that's why I hate her, because she smells funny and she farted or this or that. Versus back when I was on it, they'd show the actual entire reality portion of it. They'd show us in the house interacting with one another and just letting the cameras roll in a very not as fabricated way. If that makes sense. It still was fabricated. Don't get me wrong. We had to get out of our van 301 times to shoot one clip of us walking to the building to wrestle that day or learn to get our asses kicked.
Oh, wow.
So yeah.
Well, it just, the thing that grabs me about this season, for all the wrong reasons, is it's like you say, you get just some of that reality type feel, but then they're trying to turn it into a game show, and it feels like they ripped off TNA's gut check for this whole elimination process they're doing.
That's really bad of me, very non-perceptive of me, but I didn't pick up on that actually.
Oh, I mean, it's the same campy music. Well, I shouldn't say the same, but I mean, they're using campy music and everything else.
No, you're right. That is very similar in that regard. I never even put two and two together on that. I never even thought of that. But yeah, I can see your point on it. But overall, it just seems a little bit more manufactured. But I mean, they got some good-looking contestants. They got some people that look like they could be a star, I assume, you know? But they always did. They always had that every year. That's no different this year. You know, I don't see anything different about these contestants than the years past.
Who stands out to you from this current crop?
Nobody. I mean, okay, as a big guy, the big 6'7" guy.
Sure, yeah.
But I'm a big guy. I'm always going to root for big guys. You know what I mean? That's just how it is. So I guess him, physically speaking.
I think it's Josh. I believe is his name.
But that said, he allowed himself to get punked on television by pushing. Well, who's the guy who's always winning all the contests?
Oh, Tanner.
Yeah, he pushes him back, and then he just laughs it off. I would have taken that kid and drowned him in the damn water. If I'm Billy Gunn and Booker and the rest of these veterans are watching me get pushed like that. You know what I'm saying? I'd be kicked off the show, but I damn sure get their respect at least. And because I'm 6'7", I know I'm going to get another opportunity, hopefully down the road.
Well, and that's a tough part. That's a tough position to be in if you're him.
It's very tough. It's very tough. But that's why you don't push people.
Well, right, but I mean, any other line of work, you would think they would say, good for you for keeping your cool. In WWE, I think they do look down on you for keeping your cool and not, like, just, you know, shoving the smaller guy into the ground.
Bro, I went through that myself as a rookie. I thought going in there and being, and it's my fault completely, but in any sports setting, when I was a freshman about to start over a senior, okay, we ended up getting into a fight. It was a defensive end, and we fought in the locker room. I got so much respect from it. We ended up being friggin' good friends that entire year. You know, he ended up being a guy I looked up to, and I really reached out to for help when I needed it because I was still wet behind the ears as a freshman. But, you know, same with basketball. You know, if I was going to be starting my sophomore year over as a senior again, same thing. You know, you end up, you know, there's a certain heat you get between one another. He gets jealous, rightfully so. And you get into it, but you can handle it. You leave it in the locker room, and it's done with. When I was in WWE, I remember there was a few times there, man, where I just wanted to haul off and just start just punching people. I mean, like, this is all right. This is this fake wrestling WWE bubble world where if I kick your ass, I get fired. You know, my family's depending on me to make this paycheck here, so I've got to keep my cool. You know, I remember John Laurinaitis pulled me aside, and he was like, "You want to be a main eventer here?" Someday, and I was like, yeah, of course. And he's like, you don't see Triple H getting in the fights, do you? And I was like, no, sir. And he was like, you got to handle yourself like a professional. This is a publicly traded company now. This isn't wrestling anymore. You're not in OVW. You're not in Jim Cornette's, you know, that kind of thing. And I was like, you know, because he could see I was getting closer and closer to my boiling point of just, you know, hauling off and shattering someone's friggin' orbital socket. And, you know, and that's just something that you know, to what you're saying, you're right. It's a business, and in a business, you'd be fired for fighting. But I think in the wrestling business, if you're being screwed with or something happens where there has to be a fight and it gets policed in the locker room and the two guys come out of it better for it, you got to let it happen. It's just a natural law of the jungle. Do you know what I mean? It just is.
Yeah,
instead you lose guys' respect, unfortunately, because of it. If you don't, you know, just do what you got to do to handle yourself.
I think it is kind of a no-win situation when you're the big guy.
No, it absolutely is. You have a neon green target on your back to begin with, and here I'm trying to run as much as I could and asking as many questions as I could. Then some hater will take that, some friggin' bitter grizzled vet will take that who's not booked on TV at the moment. It hasn't been booked in months. We're like, oh, God, this Matt Morgan kid won't leave me alone. Ask me a million and one questions. Vince, he's not ready. He's greener than goose shit. You know, he's greener than grass or whatever. Instead of going, huh, so this guy wants to learn more. He's getting a great spot on television, and he's doing all the extra work in OVW on top of it, and he's asking my veterans questions. If any other coach in America would be like, holy shit, this dude's a wet dream come true. He's a non-arrogant big guy who wants to get better, God forbid. Instead, no, that's perceived as a weakness, which is so ass backwards. And again, that's what I alluded to earlier in this fake, phony wrestling bubble world, that only that exists.
in that type of world. Because
yeah.
in the real world, that is sought after. You want employees like that.
Well, does that backfire when a guy like Patrick, he does mm-hmm. have an independent background, but he's the guy that's telling everybody that he knows more than them about pro wrestling and they need to learn the business. Does that help or hurt him in the long run?
I could see the veterans liking that. I don't think it matters. I don't think it hurts or helps, quite honestly. I think it hurts if you're that one, I forget the guy's name was eliminated last week, the bald guy, who stupidly said, I don't need to know anything about the history of this business.
Right.
That's the stupidest fucking comment I've ever heard, maybe ever.
Well, you knew right at that point, he's done. I mean, that's something we see like 15 minutes of the reality part of the show. And it's,
I want to know how that was set up, though. You see what I'm saying? I really wanted to know the context of that a little bit better than what they gave us.
Well, I also feel bad.
Why were they all just hanging out in the room? They were all just like hanging out in a room and firing off shots on one another. It's almost like a producer came in and said, all right, guys, just start going at it. If you've got a problem with somebody, now's your time to bring it up. Go. And then they videotape it. You know what I mean? That's what it felt like.
Oh, well, and if you look, it resembled like when they gather around the monitor backstage and look at it from an angle. They like everyone, I think there may have been one person that wasn't like facing the camera for that. So you have all these contestants and they all just perfectly happen to be facing the camera for this argument.
Absolutely. That was, in my opinion, manufactured. I'm not there to film it, so I don't know that. But again, it gave them what they wanted to get. I mean, this is a billion-dollar company we're talking about. I don't have a billion-dollar company, so, you know, maybe they know better.
No, it's possible. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt by saying that, okay, maybe there was something that really happened, and they didn't get a great shot of it, and so they had them do it again. Did a lot of that go on during your season where you had to kind of do things over again?
No, they would just miss it completely.
Wow.
There was a lot of hooking up in our house, I remember. a lot, like... And poor Jackie got taken to task on national television.
Oh, I remember that.
Up with my, you know, my boy Pete at the time. And in reality, she wasn't the only one. There was a few girls that did that in the hot tub, and it was never shown, you know. But to their credit, to like, you know, Kiss is Ken Mock now from MTV who's producing it. Ken Mock's a gigantic success in that field, right? So. He obviously knows best, you know what I mean? And he probably had characters in his mind of who plays what role. And, oh, wow, she's doing what in the hot tub? Yes, this is right up the alley for that character that we want to portray her as.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong on this. Was Hawk kind of the first, Hawk Eukins, kind of the first fish out of water out there, over-the-top character where you knew he wasn't going to win the thing, but they're going to keep him around and keep things entertaining?
ZZ is a... direct family relative many generations ago from Hawk Youngkins. Yes.
That's where I was going with this.
Yes.
So it's all just kind of the same. I mean, you know, they're different people, but basically, you know, they're filling that slot. Because last time, Jeremiah Riggs. He was the MMA fighter that Dutch Mantel trained briefly, and he was just kind of this kind of southern, I guess, southern guy, and Steve Austin took a liking to him. It just kind of seems like that's a regular thing.
I did too, but I think they didn't have it that season. I didn't think they didn't have their court jester that season, in my opinion. I don't think he constitutes as that role because this guy will legit whip your ass. He's an MMA fighter.
Yeah.
Hawk couldn't fight his way out of a fucking paper bag.
Right.
Easy, okay, yeah, he handles alligators, but no offense, I'm not scared bumping into him in a dark alley.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Jeremiah Riggs at least has a legitimate background, and you could see his heart and passion. You could see it immediately, and it made you root for him.
And so you're going with Josh to win this thing, and...
I want him to
win. Oh, you're pulling for him, I see. Well, just
you have a gun. No, you're putting a gun to my head, and you're making me pick one. Honestly, I couldn't care less who wins. That said, I'm drawn into watching it, you know, so they're doing something right, obviously. And but because he's a fellow big guy, I'd like to see a big guy win, that's all. But I made that mistake with Silent Rage, so maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'll find somebody else. Once they don't give us enough reality for us to really learn these people. And if I could learn them a little bit more and learn more about their, you know, the layers that make up who they are, like God, what was, I'm so bad with names. God, I'm getting old, Jason. What was that? What was the kid's name that you said is a know-it-all?
Oh, Patrick.
I like Patrick, actually. I like who he is. I like his passion gets thrown around a lot, but if you can't see his passion, you're fucking blind.
Right.
He wants this badly, and I actually appreciate it. So if I have a gun to my head, you're making me vote for somebody, I revoke my mutual big man vote and give it to Patrick.
You're going to lose your big man card for that, you know.
Good.
Well, hey, I think we've already gone over our plan time. Anything else you want to say to people, just in general, if this is the end of your run, or just to kind of one more time support that, just to let people know, hey, this really is it.
Nothing, just that, you get that question so frequently, and I felt, a little guilt and bad about, coming back on Wednesday nights, and yeah, I'm back and things like that, and when in reality, it was just a one-off. But that was to perfect, the finish of our pay-per-view match. I wanted people to watch that match by all means necessary. So we helped do what we needed to have happen, and that was to get Bram over and get him to that next step that he needs to get to. And now he's perfectly set up for a good, hopefully a good 2 to 3 month angle with somebody. I hope that's what they've got for him. I don't know if that's what they got for him, but I hope they do, because they think the world of him. I know that. And he's got a big future there. They all love him, and I see why. And he's super humble, by the way. Super humble and very believable. And that's a lost art in the business, is being believable. I had trouble with that myself. I'm 7 for 300 pounds. You would think it just makes sense. Wow, Matt Morgan looks like a shit kicker. Well, there'd be times where I didn't look like one, just because I think my athleticism at times and how I spoke and the words I'd use and how I normally talk like I'm talking now, that doesn't come across as intimidating. I come across as an intelligent, very, very tall, very good body, physique having athlete. And in wrestling, I think that can hurt you at times. I think you're better off being the knuckle dragging Neanderthal if you're going to be a big man.
Fee-fi-fo-fum.
Yeah, sadly, I don't think it's the way it should be, because that's not the way sports is. If you watch basketball, for years, Kevin Garnett brings the ball up the court, and runs their offense for them when need be. Same with Dirk Nowitzki. These are 7-footers we're talking about, and same with baseball, same with football. Cam Newton's a freaking quarterback. Are you kidding me? So wrestling, I really feel need to catch up with the rest of the sports world as far as the big man evolving. And I think they're headed, if they do it right, I would totally be using Luke Harper for that exact thing. Luke Harper could be, because he can do it all. He's athletic as hell, and he's playing that country bumpkin, type of big man role.
In a very believable manner. I mean, you see him, and it's kind of like, you see him walking down the street towards you, and I think a lot of people would just cross the street to get away from him.
Absolutely. He's got it down packed, man. And I met him on the Indies, working Indies in Pennsylvania once, and he looked nothing like this. Nothing like this. And he just got better and better and better. Saw some of his work in Ring of Honor, and I was just blown away with how good he got. And I'm happy as hell for him. And they're missing the boat with him. They just need to get the fuck out of his way and let him do his thing, because he is talented as hell.
Are you sure you don't want to close this out by telling people if they didn't like Slammiversary, they can go F themselves?
If you didn't like Slammiversary, yeah. No. No, I hope, what I gave out there was I know for a fact it was the best that I could give at the time after being away for 2 years. Came back in the best shape I'd ever been in. And I just hope that people understand the reason as to why I've left and why I'll continue to stay away from the business and do what I got to do, what's best for my family. That's all that really matters to me, but there is a part of me that, felt a little guilt about being dishonest, about saying I'm back and acting like I'm back and for good and things like that. At first I didn't answer it at all on Twitter. I was just like kind of just promoting the match, And people were just asking left and right, are you back for good? Is this for good? And then they just assumed it was true that I was back for good, and I don't want there was a lot of fans that got that, that totally understand this, right? Because they see the bigger picture and they see the real world, and they're not completely stuck in the wrestling bubble world, you know, and they can appreciate my decision. But then there's a lot that, you know, that are just loyal fans of mine that just want to see me back, right?
Right.
And for those fans, yeah, I felt kind of guilty, you know. But, you know, you're a good guy, and you do good interviews, and a lot of people come to your site, and it just, you know, it makes sense to, when I left TNA, you know, did an interview with you, and it just, you know, I feel comfortable talking with you about it, obviously. And again, you get a ton of people that come on your site and read it, and I think in one lump sum, they'll be able to hear it, and from there, they'll be able to, you know, let it go and understand why I'm doing what I'm doing. You know, I came back, why I came back, it made sense too, just for the one match. And now it's, you know, back to retirement again. I'm very, very happy, you know, with what I'm doing in retirement, wrestling retirement. And that's not going to change.
Well, in this industry, I think people are totally going to be understanding. Final question for you. Your decision to come back was so your son could see you. So I think it's only fitting we close with a question about your son. Let's say 18 years from now, he comes to you and says, Dad, I want to be a pro wrestler. After
Hell
all of
no.
your really? Just that simple?
God, no, I'm joking. That
okay.
Bitter. No, hey, look, I know this. And I did this through trial and error with my cousins that are a lot younger than me with basketball. You know, they wanted to be just like me. They wanted to get a scholarship and play Division I basketball and yada, yada, yada. These two, we're talking about one that's 6'8", and one that's like damn near 6'10", to this day. And they're now like 20-something years old. I'd come back from, you know, high school practice or whatever, and I'd work with them in their driveway on basketball drills every single day, right? And I pushed it so hard on them that they ended up hating it, hating basketball. And I'll never forget that lesson I learned out of that. And I remember saying, when I have my own child, I'm not going to push anything on them. Anything that they want to do, you know, I'm going to support, and I'm going to do whatever I have to do to help them be the best at whatever that is. So if my kid comes to me and wants to be a pro wrestler, I'm going to give them the ins and outs of it. And if I were to say, no, stay the hell away from it, we know how that's going to turn out. He's going to want to do it more.
Right.
So, and then if I try to push it too hard on him, he'll resent me and he'll resent it. And it could have been something he was really good at, you know? So it's one of those balancing acts. You got to walk that fine line of like my dad did with me. My dad, because he knew how badly I wanted to improve at being a basketball player at one time, she was doing drills with me in the driveway or at the park and places like that. And so I can work on footwork, and I was doing plyometrics before people even knew what the hell plyometrics were. You know, that's directly from my father. But that's me going to my dad and asking him, hey, Dad, can we go to the park? Can we work on my jump shot? Hey, Dad, can we go to the park and you fire up some shots so I can work on my rebounding and my vertical leap and drills like that? Figure eight dribbling drills so I can work on my overall athleticism, you know? And things like that. And he had no problem doing it. He's coming home from work, busting his ass from a 9-to-5 job. And I always appreciated the time he allotted for me. I always appreciated it. And I'm just going to do the same thing with my kid. You know, he tells me something that he wants to do. I'm going to help him do whatever he has to do to be the best at it without going overboard and not without pushing my own agenda on him. Because it's not friggin' far-fetched for me to say this kid is going to be a beast. He already is. He's a whole head taller than everybody else in his grade. He's got kids in there a whole year older than him.
Wow. So if it is pro wrestling, deep down, you want him to lead Monmouth to a Final Four, right?
Monmouth.
Monmouth, my bad.
And you call yourself a sports fan? Good Lord.
Not basketball. That's just not my thing.
Oh, God, you like hockey, that's right.
I'm a Minnesota guy, Canada South.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I live in Connecticut. We had the Hartford friggin' Whalers, so I had, like, Ted Drury, and that was it, bro. So it was tough to become a hockey fan there.
You should have just become a Bruins fan like I did when the North Stars left town.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be basketball, baseball, football, whatever. I'm going to help him be the best at whatever that is. And if it's not sports-related at all, he wants to be a friggin' male cheerleader. Cool. Let's go to some gymnastic classes and make you the best at that. You know what I mean? And that's what I plan on doing.
Don't let him play hockey. If you can discourage it, do, because you might need to come back to wrestling for getting just to earn some extra pay.
You couldn't pay me to watch it. And it drives Eric Young nuts when I say things like that. And he mocks basketball, too, whenever I say things like that, right back to me. It's just all in fun. But because I don't watch it, you know what I mean? I don't think he's ever going to take it. We live in Florida, you know what I mean? It's not popular here. It's going to be baseball, it's going to be football, and then maybe some basketball. Who knows? If it's sports-related, that's what I think he'll get into. But, again, I'm not going to push any of it on him. I'm going to give him an opportunity to try everything. My first sport I ever played was soccer. You know, and I played it for years. I was a goalie. I sucked.
A 7-foot soccer goalie.
I sucked. I was horrible. I couldn't even walk and chew gum, let alone block a freaking kicks at the goal. But they probably just threw me in there, not to ruin the rest of the game. But I liked playing, so my parents kept signing me up every year. You know, I played with my friends, and it led me to other sports, though. It was a gateway sport to basketball. And those same people I was playing soccer with were always playing basketball. And then I wanted to hang out with them more and be friends, and I just followed them to basketball, and I loved it. And I got good at it quick and just continued to develop, you know?
You think hockey's boring. Imagine the hell you put your parents through watching you play soccer.
Oh, God, tell me about it. I know. Hey, those oranges were awesome.
Oh, I thought you were talking to your wife. I get it now. On the orange peel note, I really appreciate this, Matt. It's been a really good conversation. I'm happy you were able to clear some things up, and I think it's really cool that you came back for your son, and now you definitely, even though sadly, when he comes to you at 6 years old and says, "Dad, I want to see you wrestle," you're too stubborn to give in. At least you'll have pictures you can show him.
That's exactly it, man. That's 100% it. You know, and again, I'm being dead honest. It was more about really me being able to say, you know what, my kid did see me work live at least once, you know.
And you got to go out. You got some closure, you know, because I don't think you got that before. You worked those shows in Canada, but even then you didn't know that was it.
That's a good point, Jason. I never really thought of that. I think something that clicked, and I didn't even realize it. I think you're right. I really do think you're right. TNA was struggling as well on top of it. And here's an opportunity for me to come back and help them a little bit. It just made sense.
Well, I'm very grateful that you chose this medium to come on and discuss the situation. I thank you very much.
You should thank me very much, Jason. No, I'm joking. You're very welcome. I trust you with my life. You know that. And you're a good friend, and you run one of the best shows there is, if not the best show there is. So, you know, thank you for having me on, Jason. I appreciate that.